Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center. The most important ingredients to sustaining health and wellness are the resources and tools that help you live a vibrant and healthy life. At San Juan Regional Medical Center, the goal is to promote health by making sure those resources are available. Find the path to the best life at lifebetterhere.com. San Juan Regional Medical Center. Better is our mission, improving lives through personalized health and care.
This July, go on a storybook adventure with Cinderella, Rapunzel, and Little Red Riding Hood as Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods opens July 6th in the beautiful Lions Wilderness Amphitheater. With performances Thursday through Sunday evenings until July 30th, don't miss this darkly entertaining show featuring a variety of characters from Brothers Grimm fairy tales. This production will cast a spell as the story unfolds, so be careful when you go into the woods. For more information on this jolt-worthy entertainment coming this summer, visit farmingtonnm.org.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Cop Shop at FPD. With me, as always, is the vibrant and very talkative Shanice.
I'm just a social butterfly.
A social butterfly. And speaking of social butterflies, Scott is also here in the studio with us. Your very own Scott Micklin is here to help us. And we are on the information and cultural beacon of the Four Corners, KSJE. Did you know that, Shanice, that this is the information and cultural beacon of the Four Corners?
Actually.
Did you?
It's San Juan College.
Well, it's San Juan College. And it's Scott. So, of course, you know, how could it be anything else? Well, we have had, I don't know if busy is the right word, but hot. We've had hot days here over the last couple of weeks.
Extremely hot days.
So, County Mac, usually the scene of much rain and monsoons, has had clear skies and intensely heat weather. And I feel for the players that are standing out there in the field trying to play. Fans that are packing the bleachers, I got to think, are probably pretty well done by now. Have you?
I have not gone, but we've done tournaments like in Las Cruces in the summer. And as a parent on the outside, I'm dying. So, yeah.
I think that's the time you leave the kid on the field and you head to the car and run the air conditioning. But with us in studio today is one of the brightest minds in the mighty FPD. Officer Robert Decker has joined us.
I appreciate the talk up on my brain there. It's pretty handy.
Yes.
It could have came out the opposite of that.
I was debating which way to go, and I thought I'd go that way. So.
Appreciate that.
Robert's been with us for, are you 15 years now?
13.
13.
About to hit my 13.
So. Okay. Seems longer.
It's going well.
Good.
That seems long.
It's a matter of interpretation, but he's thinking it went well. So, Robert is with our district coordinator unit, and he has specifically been assigned in charge of our CIT program. And he's been there now for several years, really since its inception, that we started it up. And back in 2019, we did a pretty lengthy article with the Daily Times talking about the CIT team and the resources that the FPD puts forth to try and control some of the crises in mental health that our officers wind up bumping into. Of course, you know, from a department's perspective, mental health crises are an extreme risk for our officers. And then from our relationship with the community, when they don't go well, which happens maybe infrequently, but when it does happen, it just further strains the relationship with the community. And so we have worked hard to try and minimize those encounters, and Robert's been doing really yeoman's work trying from the ground up to try and reduce those conflicts between the police and folks who are in mental crisis. What What was it like when you started it?
So just getting off the ground, a lot of it was trying to get behind the idea that police need to have mental health training. It was started by the state around 2012, 2010, 12. There was a big transition. The state was mandating all dispatchers, all police officers, you need like a minimum of 2 hours reoccurring every biennium, which we go above and beyond on that. So I went pretty early on in my career and got certified to teach crisis intervention stuff to officers. And then I got into the district coordinator unit, and not only spiraled from there, I got deeper and deeper involved in this discipline of law enforcement, which has kind of evolved into
sure.
a specialty. And so then we're trying to figure out ways. We're looking at people in crisis that are not necessarily breaking the law. Sometimes mental health people, when they break the law, there is a byproduct of crime, but it's not the underlying cause. So a lot of times, well, in the beginning, there had to be a big shift away from, let's just put these guys in jail. And that was like the response model for all crime or anybody that was kind of getting our attention. So then getting the shift away, like, hey, these guys are actually suffering from mental health. Let's get them into something that makes a bit of a better difference. Because you think of the criminal justice system and somebody going into jail that is in a mental health crisis, a lot of times they get the bare minimum treatment, which means if it's necessary for life, like blood pressure and things, they'll get that medicine. And a lot of times the antipsychotic stuff, though, it's expensive, so they don't get that. And so they're spiraling out and they're staying, not really getting any better. And then when they get discharged, there's nothing there for these guys. So recognizing that those gaps early on, we're trying to figure out ways to bridge. So close the revolving door. If we can find their underlying issues and get them involved with the right resources, then we're going to be better off. So in the beginning, it started off with, hey, let's try to find them a couple days later when they're not in crisis. And we'd go meet them, like, hey, we're here to help you. We want you to see us as we're not the enemy. We want to partner with you in your recovery and keep you on meds and see how things are going. And a lot of times we work with the courts, too. And if they're getting help, then the legal process is just complicating that. So a lot of times we can get that stuff smoothed over and dealt with. And once they get stabilized, then they're not recurring. So in the early days, it was more like, hey, I've got this folder of resources or a pamphlet I can give you, and I would meet with you, and that would be the extent of it. And we'd try to follow up on a list of people to see how things are going. And that was somewhat successful with certain clientele, but we started to develop a much higher level of people that need a much higher level of attention.
Yeah.
That doesn't work for. They can't read a calendar. They don't really know what day it is. I mean, there's not a ton of these guys, but there's enough that when they're in crisis, the PD knows about it, the citizens know about it, and the jail knows about it if we don't have the right partnerships.
And so that was one of the first things when we started the unit, because we really didn't have anything organized that we were doing, is to find partners in the mental health community that could help us when we're dealing with people. So, you know, the rub was we're getting dispatched to people who are in mental crisis, and then we didn't have relationships, we didn't have resources that we could bring. Like you said, we could arrest folks, but criminalizing mental health problems isn't a way to improve it, A. And then B, the more times we get dispatched and we would get repeat dispatches for the same person that's in crisis, because there was no intervention, nobody was helping them to get out of it. So each new call was another threat that something bad was going to happen. And so developing those partnerships was one of the groundbreaking things that you had to get done.
Very true. And we had good luck developing some rapport and some partnerships with some of our mental health folks around here that could see that, hey, there's an issue here. What I'm looking at and what needs to be understood is people in crisis are hard to get to a clinician that has time, that has an opening. They're usually, if you try to get a mental health appointment right now, guess how long that's going to take. So trying to find a place it could be months. So trying to find a place that's able to take somebody on a crisis timeline, which is any time, trying right. to help with it. So the hospital set up to deal with that to an extent. So that's what would happen is our guys would take people to the hospital, and they may or may not have room, they may or may not have the staff that day, or the problem that's going on with this person needs to be taken to a higher level of care, which is going to be Mesilla Valley and Cruces, or take them to Albuquerque, or even Las Vegas, New Mexico, where our main mental health hospital is. It's depending on how bad it is. So somebody there at that level has to be a danger to self or others, and it has to be a very high level of, like, this guy gets out of here, he's going to do bad things, and we know it. So we have to deal with that. other than that, anybody that drops lower on the spectrum than that, they're just kicked back out the door. They really don't have a treatment plan. There's nobody leaving the offices to go meet these guys on the street to see if they're okay. So that's one of the gaps we recognized pretty early. Like, man, we got to be able to get out there with somebody that can help us. So we got lucky in finding a couple people that could. They're licensed social workers. They could come out and plug people in, but they weren't getting paid to do this. And they're still saints in my eyes because they see the need. They know that people need help, and they'd come out and help us. And but that could only go so far because they have day jobs. So trying to find a solution there that can get these guys paid so they can come out and help us on a more structured basis and actually get funding behind them. So that's been a big advancement probably in the last, since around COVID, we were able to get the LEAD program up and running, which is a way to finance that. So the LEAD program stands for Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. It's a national model. This one, the grant that we had, ran through the federal government through the state of New Mexico. And there's several counties in the state that use it. But what this does is it will pay a caseworker to come out to us, and they will have money freed up to address a crisis on the street. So somebody needs shoes, somebody needs a ride, somebody needs a house, somebody needs medication. I mean, whatever that crisis is, it's money and time and a person to staff it right there on the street and get these guys plugged in. So the barrier for this to qualify, though, is the money has to be related to people with substance abuse disorders. And a lot of times mentally ill is kind of associated, or you have a lot of that
co-occurring. There can be a lot of crossover.
Yes, the co-occurring crossover. So we actually had another entity in town that we were helping us to a degree. And just to give you an idea of the numbers we were able to put up, we started our program in July of 22. And up through February of this year, we had 28 people entered into the program. And then we were feeding another program about the same level of numbers, but we were trying to get substance abuse guys to these guys, and we tried to give pure mental health guys to another counseling agency, and we were able to field 50 individuals in a short amount of time, which is, when you look over the state, how many other people were able to field those numbers to similar programs or the exact same program, we're dusting them pretty good just because we have that demand up here. So
We were really pretty... we did a good job outreaching and involving ourselves in the program, really. And that was you and several others, Officer Chavez and a couple of the others from the district coordinator unit, really liked the program, had a good relationship with the folks running LEADS. And so that really helped build a relationship where we are using it more than many other jurisdictions that have it.
Very true. And there's a couple different ways to use it. We were exclusively working off of a social referral model, which means we didn't necessarily have to have a crime, and we had the flexibility to set it up that way. So, but if I knew somebody was in a pattern where they're self-destructive or they're unstable and they're having co-occurring or issues with the substance abuse, I can just do a referral based upon our prior knowledge, and these guys could go out there next time we find them. Most of them are homeless, a lot of them aren't, but there's a good portion of them that are tough to find. And so when we finally get somebody in the program, then we have to find them. But a lot of times they self-identify, then we're building a relationship with the jail. So when they get discharged from jail, they can directly have that relationship with LEAD, and they can grab them, discharge to their care, help them with court, and then just get them on a path where there's no gap, where they get out and go back to negative behavior patterns, which they are used to doing, just kind of wander until you find someone you know, and then just kind of reassociate with what you used to do. But trying to get them into a positive relationship where there's somebody almost daily finding these guys if they need it, they'll get them phones and keep them in contact and keep them on their medication. It's been outstanding. So we did have a hiccup, which was tragic for us. We lost the program through the grant funder, through nobody's fault of its own. It's just a tragic set of circumstances. The people running it couldn't maintain it. And so we've been without it probably a month and a half now. Boy, we're feeling it. Chief, I got to thank you big time that you took the initiative to find us another place to put that program, because that makes my job and all of our guys feel so much relief when we can get effective crisis resolution and we don't have to just put it in jail and wait for it to bake,
Yeah. So I mean, that's one of the challenges when you're in an organization, but like the police department, I don't know that it's working that well. So I wind up hearing it from my guys that DCU is worried that the program's going under, and at that point they started talking with me about the vendor was going out of business, we were losing the grant, and soon So we moved in. We tried. FPD was going to take it over for a while. But for a variety of reasons, that gets more complex when government gets into that. And we liked the people that we were contracting with at the level where they were coming out, and they were they did a lot of aggressive outreach and really partnered up with our officers well, and that's kind of rare for us. Mm. So we were able to find another partner with Anna Kretzky and San Juan County Partners, and that program has it restarted officially yet, or is it still, it's close?
It's very, very close. The MOU needs to be signed, and we need to build a referral process, but the money's coming in soon, so we're on the edge of being able to plug back in.
So that was close to, close to the end of the program. Mm-hmm. And a lot of dancing and politicking around, but in the end, it is going to be back up, which is just great news for San Juan County law enforcement, because it's not just FPD, the sheriff's office also involved in that program, mm-hmm. and the county's been a big supporter of it as well. And so, really, it was you guys coming to me though and saying, "Hey, we got a problem, we need help." and then it like, "Oh, okay, we like this program." And it's hard to always know, but we had good communication on this one, and we were able to keep a program that really does the community and our officers a lot of good.
Absolutely. So. We would be neutered without it. I mean, there's no better way to put it. We would be definitely hard-pressed without it. So we've maintained relationships, and we still want to expand. We're looking to Albuquerque and what they've done with their drop center to evolve like a 24/7 emergency crisis, because even these guys still have to go home, our caseworkers, and right. They may not be available 3 a.m. to come out. And oftentimes they're not, and so we try to pick up the next day with what we have going on here. But there's cities that have been down this road long before we have, and with all this stuff. So we're looking at what Albuquerque's doing. We look at what Pima County down in Phoenix and in the that big area, what they've set up. Mm-hmm. And what Albuquerque's done, if we could model that, even if it's to a slight degree, and those are some of the things we're looking to do, man, the city would benefit greatly. The people in crisis would benefit greatly. But essentially what you're looking at for Albuquerque is a one-stop shop where 24/7 you can drop someone off as law enforcement. And they're going to get taken into a triage room, essentially. What's going on with you? What do you need? And in Albuquerque, it's paired right with their detox facility, and that's how they fund a lot of this effort. So there's social detox grants that pay for it, and then they have, a slight mental health tax that they use for their tax base, which generates quite a bit of money. But for them, it covers their expenses, and then they can staff this, and they partner with PM Presbyterian there and then the University Hospital. Yeah. So they have a lot of other things that help them really go a lot further. So they have a massive like a wet detox, and then like a medical assisted detox if they need it. Mm-hmm. And then they also can take people in crisis, and it could be drugs, whatever. And they get these guys plugged into housing. It's all like one-stop shop. Excuse me. So if you need housing, you need medication, there's psychiatrists on board, there's doctors, and it's just a one-stop beautiful place where these people can get help immediately, get stabilized.
Like a 24-hour crisis clearinghouse, basically.
Absolutely. And so we could have lead plug into a place like that. Cops can bring them there overnight. Here I am trying to work myself out of a job, but really this is a model that would sustain the and would be a lasting legacy. If we can get this thing going, it would be used.
Well, and that honestly is the goal. It's not your goal, but maybe, but it is mine, that we can work you out of the job. Really, this isn't what the PD does naturally. The fact that we're diverting so many resources just means we're acknowledging a problem that isn't happening and nobody else is addressing. And so, you've really done an excellent job of taking the ball on it, but that's just as we're kind of building a bridge to where, and the county's done a pretty good job of trying to get more mental health resources devoted in here, but we've talked about it a bunch on this show about the lack of resources we have up here and what that means for our officers when we're dealing with folks in crisis. And some of them, it isn't even our officers. It was code enforcement was getting a bunch of folks that were in their house, their parents had maybe moved or passed away, and the utilities were all cut off, but they're still living in there. So we were getting complaints from neighbors, and code enforcement would go over and try and deal with folks. Again, not criminal issues, but people that need help. And so you've been doing a good job, but I'm very hopeful you will work your way out of a job.
We're trying.
Excellent. Well, Shanice, now you know everything there is to know about Leeds.
I know everything that there is to know about Leeds.
Well, or you know who to call.
Yes, I could help.
So we've got a few things coming up that we wanted to talk about. First of all, we're still in the middle of County Mac. Well, we're in the middle of the end of County Mac. And you can catch all the game action here on the mighty KSJE later on today, starting at 1 o'clock. And I think there's three games, and then there's maybe an if game tomorrow. So if something happens, then there'd be another game tomorrow. But I think the weather's supposed to be the same tomorrow at 100 degrees.
100 degrees.
And so I don't know that we're bringing Alaska teams down for this tournament. So if so, you probably want to skip it until next year and hope for kind of a cool down. Because this has been, this got to be one of the hottest summers we've had.
I think it was record-breaking. DC Daddy was saying that if we hit that 13th day past 100, that we broke a record.
Yeah, it's been hotter than I recall. But we are hosting Municipal League as a city, so you'll see a lot of officials from around the state at the end of August that'll be here. We'll have a big Chiefs Association meeting, but it's every section of the Municipal League, so it'll be hundreds of people coming in for that conference, which is about a four-day conference at the end of August. And then we start in, we've got Day at the Lake coming up.
Yep, this Saturday.
This Saturday. So,
this Saturday from 12 to 3 at Farmington Lake, we'll be having that. We'll be having free hot dogs and hamburgers until we run out. There will be games, a soak center. It'll be a lot of fun. So come on.
And by this Saturday, we actually mean next Saturday.
Oh, yeah, August 5th. Friday.
Yes, today's August Friday. 5th. August 5th. So Saturday, August 5th, come out and see us. Are you part of that, Robert?
I will be taking my wife for her birthday we're doing stuff, but I usually am.
Okay.
And I'm usually part of the Super Soaker station. There's all kinds of cool events we do out there and have a lot of fun. But
well, I don't know if I'll do the Super Soaker. I do the dunk tank. Yeah. And I've done that a couple of years, but maybe.
Just bring your shorts.
Yeah, bring my shorts. Yeah. Well, in 100-degree. And then we have Balloon Fiesta that starts middle of September. And I forget the exact date, but we'll get that to you. But that's coming up. As well. So a lot of things coming up here as we're heading into the dog days of summer. And of course, the number one thing that's on everybody's mind is the start of Packers training camp. So we'll update you more on the evolution of the Mighty Pack and how they're doing on next episode. And I know you're excited about that.
Oh, I'm super excited.
Outstanding.
I'll learn everything today. Nice to know.
Well, we'll break down the 3-4 defense and how Jordan Love's doing this year. all that and more on the next episode. In the meantime, have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you back here on the Cop Shop. Thanks for tuning in.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.